Thor, Odin's son. You have betrayed the express command of your king. Through your arrogance and stupidity, you have opened these peaceful realms and innocent lives to the horror and desolation of war! You are unworthy of these realms! You're unworthy of your title! You're unworthy! I now take from you your power! In the name of my father! And his father before! My Odin, your father! Cast you out!
A clip from the movie Thor, just one of the many offerings the gods of film have for us this summer. And this hour, we take a look at what's coming down the pike for our summer movie-going enjoyment. Good morning, I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm glad to be with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're happy to have Mike Mayo with us once again. Today, Mike is a film critic and a contributor to the Washington Post and the Roanoke Times. He has several books on film for the Video Hound series, including video premieres, horror show, and war movies. And we're looking forward to hearing from you this morning. Tell us what you're most looking forward to this summer. You can ask Mike about what's coming down the pike. And we also want to know what you think makes for a truly great summer movie. What's your vote for the best summer movie of all time? And, of course, Mike's got a few of his own to share. There's one big genre this summer, which is the comic book adaptation. What is your favorite comic book to movie adaptation? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or send your email to talk@WPR.org. And you can also chime in on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickert Show. And Mike Mayo, it's great to have you back on with us.
Thank you, Veronica, and thank you so much for inviting me on.
Well, you know, Mike, as I recall, you harbor no illusions about Hollywood Summer Fair. You don't think it's any better, but you got to get excited about summer movies, right?
Well, I, like anybody else, I really do enjoy going to the movies and simply sitting back and munching on my popcorn and really seeing something spectacular on the big screen. My problem comes when I feel like I'm just seeing the same thing that I've seen before, done with louder explosions and now with stuff flying off the screen at me in 3D. Show me something different. Show me something that is going to surprise me more. That's what I'm really looking forward to. I have nothing against mindlessness. I just want it to be inventive mindlessness.
That's a good quote. Well, for me, Thor fits the bill. It's one of the few movies that I've actually seen recently, and I went in there dragging my feet, not wanting to go, and I thought it was pretty great. What did you think?
I did, too. I wound up enjoying it more than I thought. I went into it very much like you did, thinking, oh, gosh, you know, just one more comic book adaptation. But I thought it did what I wanted it to. As you could hear in that quote, we've got all the hammy overacting and everything. And, again, we had not the first director that might come to mind when you think about this kind of thing, but Kenneth Branagh directed this, and I thought did a bang-up job and did exactly what needed to be done for it.
Has he reinvented himself as an action director, do you think?
I don't know if has reinvented himself, but I think he's certainly shown the people at Hollywood that he can handle this kind of really big production in the same way that Jon Favreau did with the Iron Man movies. Again, not the first guy you would think of to handle that kind of movie, but I thought in his case he really brought out the human side of it and made that really the important part of the movies in the same way that Branagh kind of got all the spectacle and even the Shakespearean elements in Thor.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I thought that there was a weird kind of logic to having Kenneth Branagh do this because he is known for Shakespeare, and he did bring that kind of over-the-top grandeur, especially to the scenes of the realm of the gods. And he, I don't know how much he had to do with casting, but I thought that he cast people who actually had bona fide acting chops. They could act, they could pull it off, and it wasn't just the usual rotation of the same 15 faces you see over and over.
And with Kenneth Branagh there, I mean, with Sir Anthony Hopkins there, and Idris Elba, another really good British actor who's starting to develop a following here in America, and oh gosh, I can't remember the name of the young man who plays Thor. I thought he held his side up too, and Natalie Portman also.
Natalie Portman, I just am never going to be won over, I don't think. She's always Natalie Portman. To me, she's the Kevin Costner of, you know, ingenues. But, you know, lots of people love her, and she looked good, and it was a great movie, so, yeah.
And she you know, is now a bona fide Oscar winner for The Black Swan. Did you see that?
You know, I didn't see that. I came awfully close to seeing it, but I think that the what I've heard about it is just too extreme for me to enjoy it.
It is extreme, and it is unquestionably a horror movie. But I thought, to me, that was the film that really showed me she can be something more than just Natalie Portman on screen. She became that character, and I believed her madness. And so I thought she'd really deserve the Academy Award this year.
That's so interesting, because Erica Janik, our normal producer, who's not here today, she's out sick, but we did a show on ballet, and she Netflixed it and watched it, and she compared Natalie Portman to me in that movie as a block of wood. But obviously she must be in the minority, because she won Best Actress.
Yeah, and I would respectfully disagree on that, because I like I say, I believed it. To me, The Black Swan is really comparable to Polanski's Repulsion, in that it's trying to show madness made visible, and I believed it. That's all I can say.
And getting back to Thor, I have to say, I believed that too. I mean, there were so many opportunities for that movie to go down the drain in terms of being too campy, unbelievable, just and it wasn't.
Yeah, it managed to pull off that kind of thing. Now, admittedly, we go into the big summer movies like this willing to let them go a little bit farther,
yeah,
in terms of craziness, but I didn't think it overstepped. I was, like I said, quite happy with the limits that Branagh put on things and the way he kind of stuck to what the story he was trying to tell.
Well, what else are you looking forward to this summer?
I guess the one thing that I'm really looking forward to will be coming the first weekend in July. And this is a movie called Larry Crown.
Mm.
It stars Tom Hanks and Julia Roberts, and Tom Hanks also directed it. This is the first time he has directed a film since That Thing You Do, the movie about rock music in the 60s that he did back in the mid-90s, I believe. I just to see him and Julia Roberts on screen together, I like that. I liked the way he handled that other movie, and so I'm interested to see how he directs it. And this is kind of a low-key story about a guy who's laid off from his job and then goes, I think, to a community college to kind of, you know, try to jumpstart his career in another direction. And it just seems to me like, you know, not a sequel, has nothing to do with comic books, shouldn't have any big explosions in it. Just, you know, something a little bit lower key that I think will be fun in midsummer.
So that's going to be obviously a big star vehicle and fun to see what Tom Hanks is up to. What about something that has a little more under the radar?
There's one out there now that I want to mention, and I'm not sure if it's still playing in a lot of theaters. But it is a little movie with Paul Giamatti called Win-Win, and it is just a terrific film. It's made by Thomas McCarthy, the guy who did The Station Agent and The Visitor.
Those were good.
Paul Giamatti plays a lawyer who gets involved in kind of a questionable transaction. Don't want to give too much about that away, but the real focus of the movie is his relationship with a high school kid who's a wrestler, and he, besides being a lawyer, he is also the high school wrestling coach. I saw this last weekend and was just knocked out by how good it is. It really does everything you want a good movie to do, just on a simple human level.
You can pretty much go see any movie that Paul Giamatti's in and be happy, can't you?
I think so. He has never let me down. There have been a couple that didn't get wide release, so I'm not going to say that everything he's done is terrific, but generally his presence on screen is a good sign.
Now, there is the genre, the kind of raunchy comedy that we associate with summertime, and I know there are a couple biggies in this area. One of them's out now, which is Bridesmaids, and the other is Hangover 2, which I happen to see a little tiny but pretty funny trailer for. What do you think about these two?
Well, they have I haven't seen Bridesmaids yet, but everything I've heard about it really makes me want to go. And it is kind of following the same formula that the Hangover did, and that the Hangover 2 is going to do again, I'm sure. And there's another one that's coming up a little later this summer called Bad Teacher with Cameron Diaz, where she is a high school teacher who is incorrect in as many ways as possible. And I like these in that they're trying to you know, kind of do the Judd Apatow sort of formula, where you have all of this kind of raunchy talk and humor, but at the same time, there's a certain sweetness to them. They tend to like their characters and to try to make us like them too, rather than just going for every bit of gross out and bathroom humor that they can find in any given situation. I am a fan of them. Some of them work better than others for me. I have to say that sometimes they just go so far that I just, you know, am aghast. And I guess I'm showing my age when I do that.
Well, what I've heard about Bridesmaids that's intriguing to me is that it sounds like it sort of redoes the summer raunch movie from a woman's point of view.
Yes.
And really pulls it off. Like, you really get to see what that genre would look like. I mean, I can't point to another movie that I can say approaches from that point of view. So that's intriguing.
No, and it's there was one that came out last year that was a bit gentler, but I think was doing some of the same things. A excellent little movie called Easy A, with Emma Stone as a girl who kind of invents a really bad reputation and becomes just the scandal of her high school. Again, just a really charming movie, well acted by all concerned, and it shows that these kind of movies do not have to be, you know, simply done by and for guys. I think if it's done the right way, women like them too, and can be a part of them just as much as the guys can.
Do you have any sense about whether guys are going to see Bridesmaids?
I think they are, because it did better than expected in its opening weekend, and I can't believe that simply because it is only women going. I haven't seen a breakdown as to exactly what the percentages are on the audience, and that they do, the Hollywood people do, you know, put it down to as fine a grain as they can in figuring out who's going to their movies and how to market it. So I think it is doing well with both men and women.
We have a clip from Bridesmaids as we get ready for break. Let's take a listen.
No carry-on, huh?
No.
Yeah, I noticed. I know she didn't put anything in the overhead bin either. And I get it. I want you to know, protect and serve, air marshal style.
What?
I don't want to infringe on your privacy, man. I just, I really appreciate what you do for this country. And I respect the hell out of you.
That's great. Not an air marshal. I'm going to take a nap.
Awesome.
Cool.
I'll take the first watch.
I'm not an air marshal. There's no, you don't need to take a watch.
Okay. I've got the first watch.
Took me a while to figure out what was going on there, but that sounds, it sounds like the acting's pretty good.
That wasn't her, but Kristen Wiig is in this, and she has really been on a streak lately.
Well, she wrote it, right?
Yeah, she wrote it, and she and Maya Rudolph are the stars of it, and she also was in a terrific little road comedy that came out a few months ago called Paul, P-A-U-L, about an alien from outer space, and she just stole that movie from everybody else in it with one of the funniest performances I have ever seen.
It was called Paul?
Yes.
I think I remember seeing a trailer for that one, yeah. And she apparently really showcases her writing and her acting in this one.
Yeah, and I think, I guess, you know, because of the Saturday Night Live connection, I think of her along with Tina Fey and the women who are doing so much stuff in comedy these days on television, too.
Well, let's take our first break right now as we talk with Mike Mayo about summer movies. What makes a great summer movie and what's coming down the pike from Hollywood and, you know, the indie theaters this time around, this summer. Mike Mayo is a film critic and a contributor to The Washington Post and The Roanoke Times. He has written several books on film for the Video Hound series, including Video Premieres and Horror Show. And he's also the author of, American Murder, Criminals, Crimes, and the Media. Our call-in number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or you can send your email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Sailors abandoned their posts without orders, without leave. Men before the mast, taking the ship for themselves. Would be that, first mate?
Mutiny, Captain.
Again?
Mutiny!
Aye. Mutiny. And what fate befalls mutineers? Now we know the answer to that, do we not? Mutineers.
A clip, of course, from Pirates of the Caribbean, the newest installment, which will be due out pretty soon, as we talk about summer movies with Mike Mayo, who is a film critic and a contributor to the Washington Post and the Roanoke Times. His latest book is called American Murder, Criminals, Crimes, and the Media. What about your expectations for Pirates of the Caribbean, Mike?
They're actually pretty low. I have never been the biggest fan of this series. I thought the first film was entertaining enough because of Johnny Depp's performance and just the sheer nuttiness of having this character at the center of the movie, Captain Jack Sparrow, who's more than half crazy and you know, just looks like he's this walking fashion disaster. But then the next two, it seemed like they just kind of took the already overblown aspect of the film and just inflated it even more, where each of the stunts was bigger and crazier, and it just went on and on and on, and I just kind of lost patience with it, to tell you the truth. I believe I waited until the third one came out on cable television, and then only made it through about 20 minutes before I decided I'd had enough. So I'm a hard sell for this one. I don't think I'm going to be dashing right out to the theater as soon as we get through to see it, even though it is opening today.
I read one scathing review in a British paper last night who just completely thought it should be tossed out with the trash, but they also said that Johnny Depp allegedly claimed not to have read the script before he agreed to do the film, which I guess is his way of excusing himself from it.
Perhaps so. I don't know. I have to assume that he is very well paid to make these films, and they wouldn't be doing them if they didn't have Johnny in them, and they craft the films to his taste also.
Well, let's take our first caller. We have Boyd, who's joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Boyd. Hello, Boyd. Are you there?
Hello. Hello, Veronica, and hello to your guest. Yes. The film that I'm actually looking forward to, because I actually like the first one, and I usually don't care for sequels, but I really do, I liked Kung Fu Panda. And I really, whenever I see any of those Pixar films, besides the animation, that aside, I really at times, I do think the story writing is quite good. And my nephews and niece are big fans of the first one, so I think this will be a real treat for all four of us. We're going to all go see it together.
Oh, fun.
And that's it. Yep.
All right, thanks. Mike, are you familiar?
Yes, very much, and I agree with Boyd. These are, the first one was just really colorful and well done. I thought the character and everything was perfectly suited to Jack Black's sensibility. He was just great in it. Like Boyd, I just kind of sat back and enjoyed this, and I went into it thinking, okay, just another bit of animation here, and it wound up winning me over more than I thought it was going to, and because of that, I'm looking forward to this second one. if for the eye candy appeal, if nothing else. and to see Jack Black and any movie that gets the voices of Dustin Hoffman and Jean-Claude Van Damme on the same screen is doing something pretty strange.
Well, as long as we're talking about summer films in particular, let's talk about summer films in general. And you have some favorites that meet your high expectations about what a summer, great summer movie should be. And one of them is Meatballs, right?
Yes, that is the great Bill Murray comedy that is set at a summer camp. And it is just so silly. He was just took control of it. It's got some of the funniest lines in it. If you listen or watch it again, assuming that you have seen it, you know, back in the distant past, if you haven't seen it, this is the thing you need to do this weekend, is to find a copy of the DVD and watch it. Bill Murray is playing the summer camp counselor who does all the wrong things. They're just there to have fun, not to do anything that they should be doing. He has, near the end of the movie, this great show-stopping moment where he delivers a speech about the upcoming competition with a rival camp, and the refrain that he keeps coming back to and back to is, "It just doesn't matter." And you will be laughing all over yourself by the end of that scene,
well,
I promise.
We do have a clip. Let's listen.
That's just the attitude we don't need, Phil. Sure! Mohawk has beaten us 12 years in a row. Sure, they're terrific athletes. They've got the best equipment that money can buy. Hell, every team they're sending over here has their own personal masseuse. Not masseur, masseuse. But it doesn't matter. Do you know that every Mohawk competitor has an electrocardiogram, blood and urine tests every 48 hours to see if there's any change in his physical condition? Do you know that they use the most sophisticated training methods from the Soviet Union, East and West Germany, and the newest Olympic power, Trinidad Tobago? But it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. I tell you, it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
I miss Bill Murray in his prime like that.
Oh, that is so wonderful. I love that movie. Perhaps it's maybe not up there in sophistication with Ghostbusters, but that has got to be right there in my top three or four all-time favorite Bill Murray movies.
And so it's got the summer camp element. It's got the comedy. What else does it have that you like?
Just the whole feeling of the camp. And to me, a great summer movie, I guess you need to have an association perhaps with seeing it in summer, but it's more important that it evokes summer and that the whole laziness, the heat, everything. I want to feel like I need a big glass of iced tea at some point in that movie. That's what I've got to have to make a great summer movie.
And we're curious about what you think is a great summer movie this morning. You've heard one of Mike Mayo's choices. What do you think is the best summer movie you've ever seen? What do you think it takes? And what are you looking forward to in terms of summer movies this season? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email is talk@wpr.org. And an email here from Rob in Siren, who says, summer movies were a lot of fun during the drive-in era. And in the dying days of that era came the best summer movie ever, Caddyshack.
Again, Bill Murray, you get that whole feeling of outdoors, hot weather. I had never thought of Caddyshack as a summer movie, but it certainly is. And a great drive-in movie.
Do you still go to drive-ins? I know there's a few of them still around.
I don't have any close to where I live that I know of. I think that the DVD pretty much did them in. The VCR kind of started the trend, and there are a whole lot of other reasons too, mostly economic, in that so many drive-ins were built out beyond the suburbs right after World War II, and as the suburbs grew, the land simply became so expensive they couldn't afford to keep them as drive-ins. But I miss the drive-in experience tremendously.
I don't know if you can watch the movie with your full attention, but there is something about having that atmosphere around you, the dark night and the crickets and the movie, that's pretty amazing. There's one about an hour from here, but I don't know. There are a few in Wisconsin. If you ever want to take a road trip to Wisconsin, we've still got a few of them here.
I'm tempted.
Wisconsin, if you want to come to Wisconsin, come in the summer. I can say that. I want to ask you about J.J. Abrams, because he's a huge name in Hollywood right now. He did the Star Trek movie and will be working on the next one as well. But he's got another one out this summer called Super 8, which people have pretty high hopes for. Tell us about Super 8.
Yeah, this is, I believe it's produced by Steven Spielberg. And it is about some teens who are out shooting their own little science fiction movie, some kids. And I believe there is a train wreck and some alien something escape, and they then become part of what's going on there. It's one of those movies that, because I like J.J. Abrams so much and this concept appeals to me so much, I have tried very hard not to see anything about it. I know that we live in the age of spoilers, where everyone's seeing all of the clips and even, taking a look at scripts before movies go into production and making comments on how good or bad it's going to be. I still want to go to movies to be surprised. I don't want to know everything about it before I go in. I want it to be fresh and right there on the screen as I'm seeing it, and to try to keep my expectations down where they belong and not be so excited about something that it could never live up to that. It's hard to do these days, but it is possible.
And what about J.J. Abrams? Are you a big fan?
Yes, I am. I thought that everything he did with the Star Trek reboot, I guess they called it, just worked beautifully. He really just, I thought, got everything I wanted there and did the just sped up the pace so much. And I believe he was also in charge of the third Mission Impossible movie. And I think a lot of people missed that because that came out when all the stuff was going on with Tom Cruise. But if you're at all a fan of the original series, get a hold of that movie. It is far and away the best of the three films and the most accurate adaptation of the TV series. I think it was the most true to what they were trying to do there. And for my money, far and away the best of the Mission Impossible movies, much, much better than either of the first two. And I think he's also working on the next one, but I'm not positive about that.
Let's get to our next call now. Bill is joining us from Shorewood. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hey, go ahead.
I don't remember what time of year it came out, but my favorite summer movie is Jaws.
Yeah, you can't disagree with that too much. That evokes summer and also complete terror. What do you like about it? Do you like being scared? Do you just like the whole shark thing?
My favorite part of the movie is the music. Mm. I think music plays such a central part in most movies, but the feelings in my back that music evokes never leaves me. I can hear it, and it sends chills down my back for minutes. It's just a fantastic piece of music from a fantastic summer film.
All right, thanks, Bill. Jaws, Mike, you can't argue with that, right?
Not at all. And I think Bill makes a really good point there, because that movie, I think, is as good an example of perfect of the music really filling a need, because for so much of the film you don't see the shark at all, but those few simple themes that John Williams created for that to build the suspense, and then the famous "Here Comes the Shark" scene or theme, really I think just contribute immeasurably to making that movie what it is. I believe it's on the special edition DVD of that, where there's Williams takes one scene and this is a separate little feature and shows it without the music and then adding in the music and how it just changes everything about it. Bill is absolutely right. I think this is right up there with the work that Bernard Herrmann and Alfred Hitchcock did together in just showing, how the filmmaker and composer can really be in sync and create something that's better than you would ever expect it to be.
Right, and I think Bill's right. You can't hear that couple of notes without, unless you're a hermit, without being frightened, thinking of sharks, thinking about deep water and things lurking.
Of course. I mean, and it does it beautifully, and it does it from the opening scene, and after that, it's just got you hooked completely. And as we said before, this is a movie that I think just evokes summer as well as any movie I've ever seen. All of those long beach scenes where so many of the important things happen, and then the last act when they're all out there on the boat on the water, that just puts you right there in the heat and the humidity and makes it, as we said, one of the really great summer movies.
Well, thanks, Bill. And on to Jack with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Jack.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for a wonderful show. I want to just comment. John Williams, both in Star Wars and Jaws, did so much setting the themes for different moments. And if I can just belabor Jaws for a moment, many years ago, when it first came out, I was sitting with a group of people in a theater. There's one scene in Jaws where they're underwater and there's a sunken, like, rowboat. And all of a sudden, a skull pops up in the rowboat. And it was probably as frightening a scene for me in the movie as any. And I jumped like a jack-in-the-box out of my seat, and the whole row of people jumped with me. It was wonderful because it was so much fun to be scared.
And, Jack, if I'd been there with you, I would have jumped too. I know exactly the moment you're talking about.
It was great fun, and it was so well done.
Well, thank you so much, Jack. And we move to June, joining us from Shawnee. Hi, June.
Good morning. And I love these shows about movies, and I loved The Guest.
Oh, wonderful.
And my summer movie is Picnic with Bill Holden, Kim Novak, and Rosalind Russell. Talking about evoking summer, there's the Midwestern thing about it, from the grand elevators to the games at the picnic and the trip down the river when she's the queen. And it's a dramatic movie, but at the same time, it evokes summer to me.
Picnic. I like that you're going back a little further. Do you remember Picnic, Mike Mayo?
Oh, yes, I do. And it is one of my favorites, too. And I believe it's set over the Labor Day weekend, so it's right at the end of summer. And if I am remembering correctly, I was just looking at the TV listings in the newspaper, and I believe it is showing on Turner Classic Movies tonight.
Okay.
And so I, for anyone who hasn't seen it, I really recommend it. It was Kim Novak and William Holden really at the top of their game. And
what is it about?
It's set in a little town in the Midwest. And William Holden is a drifter who kind of comes through, meets an old friend of his. And Kim Novak is sort of the prettiest girl in town. I believe she is engaged to his friend, and immediately sparks fly between them. And it's kind of also just there's a big weekend, a big party or festival going on that's involved the two. And there's another couple who are kind of key supporting characters. It really is just a terrific film.
Well, thank you, June. That's a great recommendation. I'm glad we have the chance, it sounds like, to see it pretty soon. And on to Anne, joining us from Kenosha. Hi, Anne.
Hi. You mentioned drive-ins, and we do have a lot in Wisconsin. We have a really successful one down in Kenosha. When we moved here 20 years ago, it was for sale, and we thought, oh, it's not going to last. And it's been open all that 20 years, and it moved from second-run films to first-run films now, and it's packed every summer.
Wow, okay.
When we couldn't get sitters, it was the perfect place for us to go see a film, because usually the first show would be something the kids could watch, and they'd fall asleep by the second one.
Oh, perfect.
So it was the only way we got out. And my favorite summer movie was Raiders of the Lost Ark. I think the summer it came out, my friends and I went to see it about 12 times over the course of the summer. It had humor, it had action, it had scary bits that, you know, you grab the guy next to you. It just had everything good about it that you could see it over and over again because it was summer and you weren't doing something else. I mean, you know, if it had been during the year when you were in school or something like that, you couldn't have gone to see it that many times, I don't think.
Yeah, you're right. That was a good one. And Harrison Ford at his finest, really. Mike,
yeah.
Mike, what do you think?
Oh, I agree completely. Raiders is one of my all-time favorite movies. It is in my top 10 list, which changes from year to year, but Raiders has to be there. And I agree. It kind of reinvented just the sheer fun of movies. You know, this movie has not a serious bone in its body. It is just there to entertain, to be lighthearted, fast-moving, to get you engaged with the characters, and to just, you know, take you on this ride. And I don't know, other movies have tried to do that since. I don't know that any have ever done it as well as that. Just the pure freshness of it. It came at a time when nobody had done anything like that for a while. And isn't it interesting how we keep talking about Steven Spielberg movies here?
Uh-huh, yeah.
He has the common touch.
We're talking summer movies this hour with our guest, Mike Mayo, who is a film critic and a contributor to The Washington Post and The Roanoke Times. His newest book is American Murder, Criminals, Crimes, and the Media. And we're also talking about what makes a truly great summer movie and wondering what your favorite summer movie of all time is. There is a lot to talk about. We can still talk about some of what is to look forward to this summer and look back at what you've loved. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email is talk@wpr.org. And you can also chime in on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickert Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
What do you believe in then?
Well, I believe in the soul. The small of a woman's back, the hanging curveball, high fiber, good scotch, but the novels of Susan Sontag are self-indulgent, overrated crap. I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf and the designated hitter. I believe in the sweet spot, softcore pornography, opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve, and I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days.
Okay, a spicy clip from Bull Durham there. And Mike, one of your favorite summer movies as we talk summer movies with Mike Mayo, film critic and contributor to The Washington Post and The Roanoke Times. He has several books that he's written on film, including the Video Hound series and video premieres. The latest is American Murder, Criminals, Crimes, and the Media. So a baseball movie, Mike, I don't think we see that many baseball movies lately, not in the realm of Bull Durham.
No. And Bull Durham came out right around, you know, the same time, Field of Dreams. And I think we kind of just, you know, went so far with baseball movies that they made a few that weren't good. We had Major League, which did well, and then the sequels to that. And I think it's just kind of, you know, it's something that's gone off the Hollywood radar right now. In a few years, it'll be back, and we'll have some more good ones. But I really do think that Bull Durham is one of the best because, as other people have noted, I think the key to a great sports movie is that you really don't care about who wins any game in it. It's the characters that are involved. You want to know about them. Whether the team wins or lose really has nothing to do with how much you enjoy the movie. And Bull Durham is a perfect example of that.
What's another one?
I think maybe the last really good baseball movie that came out, one that didn't do too well, but I thought was really good, was with Bernie Mac, called Mr. 3000, about a guy who had retired from the game and then realized that through some kind of clerical error, he had two hits less than he thought he had. And so to have those 3,000 hits, he had to go back in and play part of one more season to try to get those hits. And it's about the cynicism that surrounds sports today by the players and everyone who thinks it's a business more than a game. And I thought that's one that never really has gotten the credit that it deserves.
Yeah, this sounds like a good one. And you know, you've mentioned quite a few of these over the course of this hour, so I think we'll put them up on our Facebook page afterward. Mr. 3000, that's it. That's one I haven't heard of. And let's go to Mark next in Lake Delton. Hi, Mark.
Hi, I'm a motorcyclist, and my favorite summer movie of all time, probably one of my favorite movies, is definitely The World's Fastest Indian with Anthony Hopkins. about a guy named Burt Monroe who is from New Zealand, and he did some pretty amazing things with an old Indian motorcycle. And the one thing that I really like about it is it wasn't a cast where they threw a bunch of Hollywood pretty people at the camera. And it's really storyline-driven and character-driven, and it's just an excellent, excellent film, whether you're into motorcycles or not.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. That's one I've meant to see, but I haven't. What about you, Mike?
I like this movie a lot, too. He actually, you know, and we should mention for those who aren't motorcycle enthusiasts that Indian is the name of a brand of motorcycle. It's a kind of motorcycle, and this guy had actually sort of built his own. I mean, it started out as a regulation bike, but then he had made a lot of changes in it. And it's the story about how he took this bike from New Zealand and brought it to America to race it to test it at the Bonneville Salt Flats. And so it's kind of a road movie too, in how he got from there to here and what happened when he had tried to do it. It is, as Mark said, very much kind of a rough homemade look to it. It is kind of absolutely un-Hollywood. It is kind of the least glamorous motorcycle movie you will ever see. Hopkins did it just a few years ago, and so he's not playing, you know, the young guy on the bike. He's a grizzled old guy on his bike, and it really is a lot of fun. A very offbeat choice. I'm glad that somebody brought it up in this context, because it's another movie that I think a lot of people haven't seen and really even don't know about, but should really take a look at it on DVD.
And was that an American-made movie?
I can't remember whether the company was American or not. I think it may have been British or Australian, though I'm not positive about that.
Okay. Another call. Jeremy joining us from Round Lake. Hi, Jeremy. You're on the air.
I'm for some of the comic book movies I'm looking forward to is Green Lantern. He's kind of like the fourth guy in DC, like besides Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, but really good character, and I can't wait to see it. And then, so my favorite comic movie of all time, though, has to be Superman. You know, at least the first two with Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, those are good.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, Jeremy. And he's talking a little bit about Green Lantern, and we have a clip from that. Let's listen.
Speak the oath, because everybody knows the oath. I, Hal Jordan, do solemnly swear to pledge allegiance to a lantern that I got from a dying purple alien.
I know nothing about the Green Lantern, but I have to say that sounds pretty good.
That sounds pretty funny. And I think Ryan Reynolds is a very appealing young actor. He's really come into his own now. You know, had that big hit a couple of years ago with The Proposal with Sandra Bullock. And so now people really know who he is. And this is the first time he's, you know, doing a big movie on his own. And I really hope that humor that we heard in that clip goes throughout, because I think for most superhero movies now, you really have to have that. We've done all of the, you know, kind of dark and angsty stuff we can do, and the whole Batman franchise just has that whole market cornered. So I think we need to stick more with things that have some humor to them, some lightness, that really focus more on the character outside the suit, the way the Iron Man movies do. That I think that's what makes them so good. It's because Robert Downey Jr., I want to see him. I don't want to necessarily see the big iron suit. That's cool, but I'm more interested in what he's doing, and I hope that's what happens here with Ryan Reynolds and Green Lantern.
What is your vote for best comic book adaptation?
I would go back to the Tim Burton Batman with Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton. I just watched that again a couple of weeks ago, and it really did what I wanted it to, and it seemed fresh, not dated, really good performances, nice sense of humor, not overwhelmed by all of the stunts. It was handled on a lower key level than most of the big ones today. And I appreciate that more than, you know, the 3D effects and everything like that.
And it definitely had a look to it. It did have a bit of that Tim Burton off-kilter, dark gothic sensibility that was just a little twisted.
Very much.
Or maybe a lot twisted. Anyway, thank you for that call. And we'll move to Keith next, joining us from Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Keith.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Wonderful show today.
Great.
Okay, so I'd like to get on this movies and the summer thing. And what, I'm an 80s child, born in 77, and what really brings me to the summers is the Friday the 13th episode. They just make me think of the summer camp, the woods, teenagers out having fun in the summer, and it just really brings it. But another one is, on the funnier note of it, is would be The Great Outdoors with Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase, and that one really is a great summer movie as well. And what I like to say about movies as well is they're just such a type of nostalgia for me, like with the way grass would smell or something that just brings you back. I see this movie and it could just really just take me right back to my childhood. Well, thanks for taking my call. Have a good day.
Yeah, thank you so much, Keith. And Mike, Great Outdoors and Friday the 13th.
Again, not the first things that come to my mind when I think of summer movies, though when they're put that way, I can definitely understand why someone who experienced them in the summer at that impressionable age would think that. And that's something else that we haven't mentioned. So much of the movies that really impress us and that stick with us are the ones that we see when we're teenagers, when we're really open and receptive to new ideas, and when you run into a Raiders of the Lost Ark or a Jaws when you're young, or a Great Outdoors. It has an effect that is absolutely immeasurable, and you can't criticize those movies then. They're just part of your life, and you accept them for that and love them.
And I want to get to more of the phone calls waiting, but I also want to ask you about a movie that I saw coming out that intrigued me, and it's the latest Woody Allen movie. I think it's called Midnight to Paris with Owen Wilson.
Yeah, it's actually opening today in New York, it played at the Cannes Film Festival recently. It is, from what I've heard, one of his better ones. It's very light. Owen Wilson plays a writer who's in Paris with his wife and gets. I don't want to give away too much because this is one that I know a little bit too much about. He has some adventures on his own that may or may not be sort of supernatural. It's very kind of a literary thing. This is Woody Allen at his most playful, as I understand it. I was a little, put off by it at first. It sounded maybe a little too cute, but everything I've heard says that this is Woody Allen kind of doing the kind of thing that he does very well, and that it's more of a crowd pleaser than I thought it was. So I'm looking forward to it.
Right. I read that it was sort of Woody Allen returning to sort of his former glory, and that Owen Wilson does a great job of sort of standing in for Woody Allen, in a more handsome Hollywood-style physique, but that he really does capture that sort of that patter, that inner brain talk, and also that it's just kind of moving and graceful, like you said.
I really hope that this works, because some of the things he's done recently, like You Will Meet a Tall, Dark Stranger, I felt really didn't show off the things that he does best.
Let's take another phone call now. Melanie joining us from Dousman. Hey, Melanie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I really have two that really mean summer for me, and one is Breaking Away, and the other is Stand By Me.
Yeah, those are Stand By Me. Yeah, that's one that was, I think, is really evocative. I remember seeing that in summer. And there are certain movies, Mike, I don't know if you have this. For me, Stand By Me is one where you leave the theater and the movie kind of bleeds over into what happens next. And you sort of see the world around you in a different way because of that movie.
I agree completely. And to me, I agree with Melanie in that Breaking Away is one of those movies that did that for me. Simply because when I saw it, I lived in a small college town, and so I had a feeling that when I left the theater, and I literally lived close enough to the theater in those days, that I could walk home. I felt like I had walked out of the theater and back into the movie I'd just seen that was set in this college town and with all the students around me and everything. And that is another movie that I think just so wonderfully evokes summer, the heat of it, the feel of it, in a college town, and the time of being, right after you've graduated from high school, with so many possibilities that are open, but you don't know exactly what you want to do. You've got your friends, but you're all kind of moving apart, getting married, things like that. That is just a wonderful movie, and that's the one that I think I'm going to have to go find the DVD and put that on and watch it again tonight.
I don't even know if I've heard of that one. So, okay, Breaking Away.
It's about a kid in Indiana, played by Dennis Christopher, who decides that he is not just a Midwestern kid, but he is Italian. He pretends to be Italian. And his whole world revolves around bicycle racing. And it is just absolutely wonderful, charming. It's about his relationship with his parents, his relationship with a girl that he meets that summer, his relationship with his friends. Dennis Quaid is in it, too. It is just an absolutely wonderful movie. And for the people who have been listening to us this hour, like I say, this is kind of my favorite, all-time favorite summer movie. And if you've spent a while since you've seen it, take another look. I promise you will be entertained.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for that vote. I'm definitely going to see it. Well, Mike, this was so much fun, as always, and I appreciate you joining us again.
Thanks, Veronica. I really appreciate you inviting me.
Happy summer movie watching. Mike Mayo, is a film critic and a contributor to The Washington Post and The Roanoke Times. His newest book is American Murder, Criminals, Crimes, and the Media. Thanks to Joe Hartke for technical direction today, and to Rhonda Fanning and Erica Janik for production. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.